You are listening to the Legion of Substitute Podcasters, Episode 6, Bring On the Bad Guys. And welcome to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, Episode 6. It looks like it's just the two of us tonight. It's just myself, Paul French, who is, this is going to sound weird, but is Wee Lad. We bought ourselves a Wii today, and perhaps I could have better thought through that name.
I'm thinking I need to get you some Depends. I don't know.
but we know, you know, we bought the Wii, and we got like the Dance Dance Revolution, and we were playing the tennis and all that, and we both know that our right arms are just going to be absolutely killing us tomorrow. So tomorrow I may well be arm fall off boy.
Oh, sweet. And I am Darren Noel, and I am right now condo shopping lad.
Oh.
Because I spent most of my day looking for a place to hang my hat today.
So, outstanding.
There's lots of condos on the market here in Hotlanta, and I'm looking for the right one. And I went into one, and someone had painted, I think I found where the vampires lived in Atlanta.
Oh, no.
Because the walls were not just red, Paul.
Oh.
They were blood red. Not like Chinese red, not fire engine red, not cherry red. Blood red walls.
You
and
know?
It had a faux fireplace
mm-hmm.
and a crucifix on the wall.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
What dungeon did I just walk into? I felt like I should have paid a cover or something.
That's totally it. You know, I mean, a friend of mine, his wife had painted their place up like that. Like they had the red, and then she did like the sponge treatment with so it was like black and red. And
oh,
it
yeah.
was
that's
it was
kind of like what it was. Maybe they'd live here now. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a little
very,
a little on the creepy side.
Uh-huh. It was very frightening. I was like, no, not for me.
But
no.
you're exactly right. Like you go in there and you think that you're at some seedy club or something, and it's
oh totally
it's, what's going
totally.
On.
And I'm pretty open, and I know a pan of paint, you know, will kill that. But
mm-hmm.
I'm kind of scared as to what's happened there before me.
Mm.
And then I have to hire a small gypsy woman to come in and clean it. You know,
so. Was it Zelda Rubinstein?
Exactly. I've got her on speed dial, baby.
Outstanding.
I don't fool around with that crap. Not in this town.
No, sir. No, sir. You know, it doesn't pay.
Not at all. Not at all.
So anyway, our topic for today was originally going to be, it's something different now. And we're going to...
Yes, we changed our mind.
Yeah, because we can do that.
Mind-changing lad.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, we're we are substitutes.
Indecisive boy.
Waffle lad.
Oh, only if he runs for politics.
There you go. So let's start off. Let's talk. Want to go over some feedback, and want to also talk about a couple of websites. And you had one that you wanted to start off with.
Yeah, I have a website. It is, and I'll just spell it out for everybody, http://, readersadvice.com/lsh/lsh.html. This is Get a Life, Boys, Legion of Superhero site. Love his name.
Absolutely.
I think I need to get a life, too. This is a website apparently by a Mr. Don Sakers, and he's one of those old-time Legion fans we've talked about recently.
Yeah.
And he's been around for a long time, but the most amazing thing, and his site has got a lot of great stuff on it, but the most amazing thing is, for those of you who are confused after the Baxter run ended and the five-year gap began, he has the lost issues from the five-year gap on his site. And you go to this link, and he has actually carried through the plot from Paul Levitt's End of the Magic Wars
oh, yeah.
to the beginning of the five-year gap. And it is the only thing that made sense to me at the time.
And you know, not only has he gone through and sort of taken the plot threads through and sort of said where that's all going to lead, but he's actually gone through, there are covers. He's had some people draw some of the covers. He's you know, cobbled together covers from other issues and that sort of thing. And you know, he hasn't just sort of said, you know, well, this happens and this happens. He's actually delineated it by issue. And mm-hmm. it's just spectacular. I mean, there's a reason they call him Get a Life Boy.
Yeah, seriously. And it makes me wish that DC would publish it.
Absolutely.
Hire him,
absolutely.
Have him write it, publish it. Okay?
Exactly. And you know, I mean, I know that some Legion fans sort of when they hear about, you know, one of the Uber fans taking over, you know, that's, you know, I mean, that was the 5-year gap, right? You had the Beer Bombs who were both Interlac members, and a lot of people, you know, got kind of iffy about that. But hey, I kind of dug a lot of what they did. So,
mm-hmm.
you know,
totally.
As I say for people, you know, it's like, yeah, your mileage may vary, but there was some great stuff going on in that book. And you know, if nothing else, it really, especially just in the the first dozen or so issues, just really showed you, you know, why these you know, when they were kids, why they were heroes and why they still were. So anyway, so yeah, he fills in the gaps for us.
Yes, we all owe a debt to Get a Life Boy.
and just tying into another website, we had an email from Matthew Elmsley, and he does a site called Legion Abstract. The Legion Abstract, and it's at legionabstract.blogspot.com. And he just said, just listen to your second podcast and enjoyed it. And we get more of the debate on Karate Kid and Triplicate Girl. He says, the thing about the Karate Kid and Triplicate Girl, we saw Three-Boot Val and Lornu disappear from Planet Velmar, yes. But we also saw them appear with the rest of the Three-Boot Legion in Final Crisis Legion of Three Worlds number 2. So it still seems to be the John's retro boot Karate Kid and Una, probably. And so he says to that, you know, that he wouldn't be at all surprised if that just ends up getting left up in the air. And, you know, he's probably right.
Oh, he's totally right. That's why I think it's a waste of an argument, you know, quite frankly.
Which totally diffuses what I was going to say next. But the next thing I was going to say, you know, that's the thing with time travel. You know, who says that they're being grabbed from, you know, that particular issue of Legion? It could be just before the shooter run, because maybe Johns has decided, yeah, I don't want to go too far with that either.
Yeah, well, that could be it. It just felt like the page in the Three-Boot where they sucked them out.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was not an accident that they got sucked out. I mean, that those two specific characters together really didn't do a lot of interacting in the Three-Boot so much.
No.
So, I mean, it really was like, okay, here's how we're going to kind of tie into it, and I kind of get that, but it still didn't make any sense.
Right, right.
Because it didn't feel like Sensor Girl would still be telling Val how much she loved her if it wasn't her Val. And that's what happened in the JLA-JSA thing.
It is. But then what if, you know, what if you'd had someone that you loved taken from you and mm-hmm. you met like an alternate universe version of them?
I go to therapy.
Well, there's that, but you know, if you're Ray Palmer, apparently you just move in and set up house
and take over. Yeah, that sounded heroic, didn't it? Wow. I have a lot of problems with Countdown. Can you tell?
but you know that it does seem that you know there may be some that kind of reaction, because to her it is kind of the same person.
Exactly.
I don't know. Hopefully it will get resolved, but my bet is, you know, as you say and as Matthew said, that it probably won't be. But yeah, definitely check out his site. There's a lot of great info on the various eras of the Legion, you know, reviews of issues as they come out and all that kind of stuff. So definitely worth checking out. Another one that we've gotten, this kind of ties into the little biography I talked about way back in episode 1 for Otto Binder. And he actually was able to get a little bit more detail on the claim in the bio that Otto Binder's iRobot story inspired the Asimov character. So this is from Mike, and he says, "Hey guys, fantastic show. I'm only 45 minutes into the first one and think it's wonderful. I look forward to many more episodes. I especially appreciate that you aren't doing panel-by-panel rehashes, but are dealing with the stories in the context of both Superman and Legion continuity, or continuities, and the American culture in which they were written and drawn. For example, your comment about the jetpacks being a reflection of the 1950s ideal of the future. This is a great way to tackle this material, and I encourage you to keep doing so. I do, however, want to nuance your claim that Otto Binder's iRobot story inspired the Asimov character Robbie and his book of the same title. It really oversimplifies the relationship between the two robots and suggests a direct causality where there may not be one. According to Clouton Nichols' Encyclopedia of Science Fiction entry on Binder, he says, Adam Link, the robot protagonist narrator of Binder's story and its sequels, is highly anthropomorphic, though Isaac Asimov's somewhat more austere sense of the nature of robots and robotics was soon to establish itself in the science fiction field as an almost unbreakable convention. The Adam Link sequence is an important predecessor, significantly treating its robot hero and his wife Eve Link with sympathy. And if you have that encyclopedia, it's detailed on page 121. He says, so while there may be some superficial similarities between Adam Link and Robbie, both sympathetic robot characters, I think that may be as far as it goes. I'll admit I have not read the Adam Link stories myself, but Asimov definitely can claim credit for the concept of the positronic robot, even though Binder first presented a sympathetic robot protagonist. This is not to diminish either author's accomplishments, again, just to clarify. It says, interestingly, Adam Link was the basis for a 1963 or 64 Outer Limits episode, also entitled iRobot, which was remade in the 1990s version, both times featuring Leonard Nimoy in the cast. He says, keep up the good work. Long live the Legion.
Woohoo.
Yeah, that's cool. It's great. I mean, we've had some great feedback from a lot of listeners, and it's really sort of great to sort of see everybody sort of coming out with that love of the Legion, and also to really get some really intelligent discourse on some of the stuff that's going on.
I would agree with that.
And how?
Because I haven't read a lot of Asimov. I have to be honest. Mm-hmm. I find him, there's science fiction, and then there's fantasy, and then there's that meaty genre in the middle, and I find some science fiction just so dry.
Absolutely.
That I have a hard time plowing into it, and Asimov's one of those writers I just can't wrap my head around.
Yeah, I'm in a similar space. I haven't read a lot of his stuff either, but although he actually, at some point, from what I understand, used my name as a pseudonym. and I'm not sure what he wrote under that, and maybe if anyone knows, hey, let me know. But I know at some point, there's things that were credited to him under the name Paul French.
Sweet.
Yeah, long before I was born, apparently. But I just thought it was kind of neat. So see, there's my Asimov connection. Fairly tenuous, I'll grant.
Well, I have a connection in that I use pseudonyms, but I will not tell you which ones. How about that?
Well, we use pseudonyms every week right here on the show.
Indeed, we do.
It's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Exactly.
So anyway, we can't get into like all of the feedback. There's been some great stuff, and if you're interested in reading it, there's a lot of comments on our website, and that's at legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, and there's also a lot of stuff on our forum, and that's at forum.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, and join in the conversation there. We have talkback threads on the actual episodes, and we've also got a discussion on just sort of all of the books that involve the Legion in some way, and sort of filling those in. And there was a great discussion after the first episode just about that whole claim of, would they be at episode 700 or issue 700. There was the one three boot issue where they did they had the number 568 on there, and that was basically, there was a whole bunch of sort of different ways of reasoning through which which issues count. And
exactly.
and to be fair, I think they had included the entire Superboy run, which
that didn't count. Sorry.
No. Totally. So, you know, it's been really interesting as people have tried to put together their theories on sort of which ones count, which ones don't. Does, you know, does Legionnaires count? Does the 4-issue reprint series from the 70s count? And that sort of thing. And, you know, I mean, they're all issues of the Legion, but it's just that, you know, if you took like Batman and said, you know, do you count every Batman miniseries? Because if so, like he's up to issue like 10,000.
Seriously.
So, you know,
Superman, Batman, Wolverine, I mean.
Exactly. You know, it's like,
how many issues have they had between the three of them, for crying out loud?
You know, so do we, you know, do we say, well, every issue of Brave and the Bold counts too. And good God. Yeah. Wolverine, he's appeared in a lot of places. That's really all I got to say about that. I was going to try and come up with something witty, but I just couldn't. I couldn't reach for it, so it was just
the alternate universe Timberwolf. You mean? Oh wait.
Oh! Did you just go there?
Yes, I went there.
Oh, no, you didn't.
I went there, and I'll go there again.
Hey, there was I mean, there was a lot of that, wasn't there? When you think of the, you know, I mean, let's face it. When Cockrum went over to Marvel, what was the last book that he'd drawn at DC?
Legion.
Exactly. And so, I mean, you know, there's all the talk of Nightcrawler having been a design for a member of the Wanderers.
Yes.
And
he was going to be a Legionnaire at one point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a great character design. No wonder.
And I think that's why we got Gates in the Archie Legion.
Yes.
Because Gates is an actual Nightcrawler.
That was a really neat touch, wasn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's a, you know, taking an actual.
He just doesn't speak with a German accent, but that's fine.
Exactly. You know, Legion, it's close enough.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So anyway, again, with the feedback, please, you know, we love to hear it. We love to read it. It gives us very happy feelings.
Makes us warm in special places.
And with that, we should move on to the next issue of our reviews of the Legion. And this one's actually kind of fun.
This one is kind of fun because guess what? We finally have villains.
Absolutely. And I actually bought a copy of this issue, sort of reader's copy for like I think it was like $40 in the summer, and you know I was steering away from any of the, you know the older issues, and they had this the my local comic store had bought a collection and this was in there, and he's like, I know you like the Legion, you want it, don't you? And it's like, damn it,
want some
damn it,
candy,
yes,
you little boy.
Seriously, and so you know I also got to read the Crypto Battles Titano story, which is quite interesting. Oh. Yeah,
I bet that was amazing for Crypto.
Yes, indeed. So just looking at the cover here, this is Superman issue number 147, which features the Legion of Supervillains, and it is of course an homage to that that original cover of Adventure 247. And this time it's with a few different people. We've got Cosmic King, Lightning Lord, and Saturn Queen. Now, of course, we already spoke about them when we were doing the Legion of Three Worlds episode, and so we've gone into detail about who they are and what they do and all that kind of stuff. But you know, they're basically all voting for death.
Oh yeah,
for poor old Superman. And this one's, you know, it's a great Kurt Swan cover, you know, because it's Kurt Swan. They're all great. Inked by Stan Kay, and when you get into the actual story, it was written by Jerry Siegel, penciled by Kurt Swan, and inked by Sheldon Moldoff. And I always love when Sheldon Moldoff inks stuff, because it he had a really, you know, you get so used to his sort of really cartoony style, because you start thinking of the things he did that were more cartoonish books, and And you look at the there's scenes like on the second page of this one with Luthor in prison, and you know he lays down some beautiful you know black ink on that, just with all kinds of lighting effects as far as the lights coming through the bars and the windows, and it's some really great artwork, and
it's the most sophisticated artwork we've seen in Legion to date.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it, you know, it's great because, you know, I mean, even just comparing the covers and that original Adventure 247 cover was also a Kurt Swan cover. And so he's, you know, he's kind of paying homage to himself. and actually Stan Kay also inked that cover. You look at the difference between that, and you see sort of in the intervening, 3 years, just how the style has changed. Or maybe he was just drawing Superboy stories.
Just tracing.
You know? Man, they didn't have light boxes back then.
Like, I've already done this cover. How many times do I have to do this cover?
of particular interest to me, and I don't have any sort of detail on you know who the characters may have been based on look wise. I've been reading a lot recently. I picked up the DC Vault a little while back. And they get into talking, you know, some of the Silver Age history, and you see this also when in looking through some of the showcase volumes, like the Atom one and that also you know, like Gil Kane in particular was really noted for taking, you know, a famous actor's face and using that as the basis for a character.
Mm-hmm.
And he had actually used Paul Newman as the basis for Hal Jordan. And I can't remember the name of the guy that he used, that he based Ray Palmer on. Maybe Robert Taylor. I'm not sure of that one exactly, because I'm just sort of remembering this off the top of my head. But Paul Newman was definitely the basis for Hal Jordan. And I think, you know, so you sort of get a little bit of these, you know, hey, photo referencing was around back then too, folks. but they would sort of start with that as the basis and then flesh out the character from there.
It would make sense that in, you know, an artist's world, you want to find someone who looks like a hero.
Exactly.
And so the most readily available, you know, stock footage at the time would be your local Saturday matinee.
Exactly. So that was definitely one of Kane's things. And I don't know if that was something that Swan was ever into, but man, you know, Lightning Lord in particular has that Hollywood villain look.
Oh yeah.
You know, he's, you know, with the slicked back hair and the little mustache and all that, you know, he definitely looks to me like some kind of old movie serial villain. You know, he's got a bit of the, you know, the Orson Welles and Citizen Kane look going on. He even looks a little bit like, was it Caesar? Who was it that played the Joker in the
Caesar Batman? Romero.
Caesar Romero, thank you. He's mm-hmm. got a bit of, you know, that's kind of what he looked like when he was in, like, doing Dynasty, you know, later on in his life. And that's sort
yeah,
of
well,
thing.
Saturn Queen here is reminding me of a cross between Joan Crawford and Barbara Stanwyck.
Totally, yeah.
And they were the ones who played those evil women, you know, which the evil women roles didn't happen that often, you know, mm-hmm. so... When they got one of those roles, like Barbara Stanwyck in I think it's called Double Indemnity.
Yes, that's exactly the one I was going to.
That, if you have not seen that movie, okay, stop what you're doing. Netflix it.
Yeah.
Get it. Watch it. And you will see basically Saturn Queen.
Oh, without a doubt.
She is an evil manipulator from beginning to end, and that is just the way it is.
Yeah, and of course... In that movie, her leading man is Fred McMurray, who was mm-hmm. the basis for C.C. Beck's facial design for Captain Marvel.
Well, there you go.
See, it all ties together.
It does tie together.
It's a beautiful thing, but you're right. The Stanwyck thing is huge, and it's those sort of tufts of hair at the top there that's where the Joan Crawford side of it comes in.
Well, that and the eyebrows. I mean, those eyebrows are Joan Crawford eyebrows from the word go.
I can't figure out who, you know, I can't really recognize anyone in Cosmic King, but yeah, so there you go. See, it's an awful lot of time we spent on that cover. Okay, so let's move on in here. Let's keep in mind that this, again, ties into that whole idea of time travel in the... In sort of the Weisinger area, or right Weisinger era Superman titles or Superboy titles, whichever, where it mm-hmm. was like the future wasn't a time, but rather a place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if Superboy traveled into the future, he would see the Legionnaires as teenage superheroes. But if Superman traveled in the future, it was like a parallel line kind of thing. And, and you know, it's, which, of course, must have been the time trapper's fault.
it always is.
Exactly. But, you know, the idea was that, well, if you know that the thought process had to be, well, if Superman's an adult, then the villains and the Legionnaires must be adults. Because, you know, it's that many years later, forgetting that, you know, when you're traveling through time, you can land at any point. And, you know, the future is the future. But yeah, the future was treated as though it was a place. And I think that's probably the best analogy for it. It was a place that you went to where time had passed just the same as it passes at home. So, of course, Luthor, you know, our good friend Lex Luthor, this is back when he used to always wear the prison grays. Long before Super Friends in the purple suit.
I love the purple suit.
It is somewhat fabulous, isn't it?
It's got the high collar. It's got the harness on it. It's got the guns in inappropriate places. So yeah, totally
genius. All right. So anyway, so we get Luthor, you know, saying to the warden he'd like to repair the other convict's broken radios.
Yeah, uh-huh. Isn't that altruistic of him?
You know, I mean, let's face it. At this time, Luthor's been, you know, as a character, has been around for, you know, what, like, I don't know, 23 years.
Yeah, 20 or something. Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah. And, you know, don't they know already that he's trouble? doesn't the warden, like, get like a stack of back issues and start reading up and like, wow, this guy's bad news.
Well, it's like the Joker in Batman's world. When they roll the Joker into Arkham Asylum, I know, yeah, Batman took an oath not to kill.
Yeah.
But if you're the prison guard and you've been there, it's the 20th time to see Joker roll through there, wouldn't you just, you know, want to put a cap in his head? Just save yourself the trouble later.
Oops, I was cleaning it. It went off.
Yeah, it went off accidentally. I'm so sorry.
You know, no one's going to convict that dude.
Exactly.
So anyway, so we see Superman, or we see Superman, we see Luthor in the prison cell. And as I said, this is the page I was talking about, that it's really great artwork. And I mean, you know, still holds up really well. So, of course, we remember a few weeks back we did the story of the Living Kryptonite, Army of Living Kryptonite Men.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where one Lex Luthor met Lightning Lad, another LL, and he learned that, hey, he's got, you know, he's got this legion of superheroes. There must be a legion of supervillains.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, absolutely. And so here we are, and that first story, of course, took place January of 1961 in Superboy issue number 86. So that was January 61, and this comes out in August of 61. So, you know, tell me there wasn't continuity in the Silver Age comics. Huh? There you go.
Barely.
There you go.
Barely continuity.
They paid this one off within 8 months.
Paul, it's okay because, you know, John Byrne came through here and paved right over these stories.
Yeah, he put
right.
Big old parking lot. okay, so of course, and actually Luthor references this and says, you know, years ago, Superboy, now grown into Superman, in case you didn't know, was saved from being destroyed by me by a member of the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, isn't this the first time that we're seeing Superman and the Legion together at the same time?
It is. It is, because we've seen Supergirl, so we know that that there's the future, you know, the future Legionnaires. Or we know that the Legionnaires have dealt with people from that particular era. But, you know, it's still, we haven't actually seen Superman interact with them. Okay,
well,
so
no time like the present.
Okay. Absolutely. Sorry, I thought I'd lost you for a second there.
I'm sorry.
So he says, you know, he's calling the future and the arch, only in the 60s, arch criminal Luthor from the year 1961 calling the Legion of Supervillains. you know, arch criminal Luthor right here.
And what's weird is they heard him.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
So radio waves from 1961. Apparently, hold on. How long? For many hours he does this. So let's say overnight.
Yeah.
Luthor is saying this all night. And suddenly at dawn, as it says in the panel, they have heard his call.
And this is how badass Luthor is. The, you know, 60s Luthor. He can take little radio parts. You know, I mean, come on. You take even
he's
a
MacGyver.
Modern radio. He's totally MacGyver. He's MacGyver without the cool mullet.
Okay, the mullet was never cool.
Yeah, I know.
let's just get that. let's settle that argument right now. The mullet was never cool.
There is no argument, sir.
not in my achy breaky world. Sorry.
So they say, we heard your summons. Use these objects to escape. Luthor will join you soon in your own time. So they materialize a little gun, a helmet, and a belt. And he fires the gun at the cell wall, and away it goes. And out he gets.
And what's amazing is Luthor's got an anti-gravity belt,
mm-hmm.
which the Legion won't have just quite yet.
Well, but this is the adult Legion. You know, they're just further ahead.
Oh, well, totally. Well, they should have the rings by now, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to get to that little gap. Here's something interesting, though. The flying saucer materializes and hurtles down from the sky, and they say, enter, Luthor. We are your friends from the 21st century who are aiding you.
It's a math error.
Well, it's definitely a math error, but you know, I start looking about, you know, he says from a future era, you know, did someone not? I mean, Siegel had written Legion stories by this point. I don't know.
Yeah, I just think this was sloppy editing.
Yeah, at 100, I mean, that's honestly. Close enough, isn't it? Yeah. So
yeah, just add 10 to the century count.
Exactly. So he gets into the ship and, of course, meets the Legion of Supervillains. And it actually goes through the origins, and while we covered Lightning Lords, we kind of, you know, didn't get into too much detail on Cosmic King. And basically, he was an alchemist on the planet Venus, and so he was trying to change the object's atomic structure. And he finally created this ray that actually did this, and he accidentally suffered a dizzy spell and stumbled into the ray and thought, oh, what will it do? Is it going to kill me? But what it turns out, there were rays from his eyes. There's the thing with the eyes again, just like when Cosmic mm-hmm. Boy had the magnetic eyes before. And so there's...
Oh, he's got them on the splash page. Did you see the splash page? They kind of messed up their powers, actually. If you go back to page one...
Yeah.
Cosmic Boy is disintegrating the thing that Cosmic King is hurling towards Cosmic Boy. So it's kind of like, yeah, that should be reversed.
Yeah, that's funny.
But they're both doing it with their eyeballs, so hey.
Yeah, so that still seems to be around. So, of course, Venusians consider transmutation evil, so he gets exiled from Venus. And so, you know, he was bitter, and so he went to Earth in the 21st century. And mm-hmm. became a super criminal. We could see him tomorrow.
Well, we could.
Yeah.
In fact, he might be on CNN.
Maybe he will be.
But if Venus considers transmutation evil, then is it possible that they hired Roxas the pirate to destroy Element Lad's homeworld? Just a question.
Oh, see, that's interesting. See, you see what you're doing right there. You're giving out valuable plot threads for someone to turn around and write a Legion story.
And years later, well, I hope so.
Yeah. And then years later, have someone else completely contradict it.
And that's fine.
Indeed, because we'd still have that story. So, of course, Lightning Lord talks about his brother, Lightning Man, formerly known as Lightning Lad. And goes through the story, and of course, as we know, the story of the Wenathian brothers on Korbal did get changed. Now, I think that was the first time we actually learned how Lightning Lad got his powers.
Yeah, I think it is actually. This is their first telling of their origin.
Yeah,
and of course, it misses the third member of the party, and also misses the whole reason why they were on there, which is that their spaceship needed recharging because there's no spaceship in the panel. So once again, of course, when you're telling origins, you start off with the basics, and then you can get to expand upon it later.
Exactly. So anyway, it turns out that, of course, the beasts passed the powers on, and Lightning Lad decided to use his power of super lightning to help others, whereas Lightning Lord decided he would use his new power to commit crimes. So, of course, when their families came to Earth, he says, my brother joined the Legion of Superheroes, and then I joined this Legion. Now we get to Saturn Queen. And you know what? Now that you mention the whole Barbara Stanwyck and the Joan Crawford look, you know, it's like she suddenly becomes the most menacing of all. And I mean, they've since made her that, you know, they've since made her just like, I mean, you know, in Legion of Three Worlds issue two, she's just absolutely devastating.
She's one to be reckoned with, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And so, of course, she talks about being from the planet Saturn, where there's been no crime at all for centuries, and how everyone can, you know, perform these great feats. And she said one day when she traveled to Earth, she had this sudden desire to actually, you know, be a criminal. And, you know, she was...
And there's a story there.
there really is. And I was about to say, isn't that interesting? And then I remembered, oh, yeah. So we will certainly get to that. Anyway, so Luthor is loving this. He's very grateful to the Legion for saving him. And they're like, yeah, you know, that's fine and all, but we got a job for you. And what he's decided is that, you know, basically, you know, this Legion of Superheroes makes it very difficult to pull crimes in their future era. But he knows that, you know, Superman's a member of the club. So if they destroy Superman, it would totally humiliate the Legion. That's their thought process.
You hear that, John Byrne? my heart bleeds. Anyway.
So Superman's trying to do all these different things, and he creates this pet project called Orphan City, which is a whole bunch of buildings that have been donated by various countries so that he can make this beautiful orphan asylum. And everyone's really pleased about this, but then that nasty character, Lightning Lord, comes flying down with his jetpack. They gave Luthor an anti-gravity belt. They use jetpacks.
Yep. Yeah. But here's the thing. If you're going to fight Superman, do it with lots of collateral damage and innocent bystanders around. That's the only way you're going to win.
Without a doubt, because then he's too busy trying to save them.
Exactly.
And, you know, what does he do? Superman managed to get all of the toppling buildings and all the debris from landing on the orphans. But then, of course, there's one of the buses, and Lightning Lord has one of those, and he threatens to increase the voltage and electrocute everyone on the bus. Superman has no choice.
But you open.
Yeah. So you know, there's nothing he can do. So I guess, you know, they just kind of leave it at that. And then the next day, he's passing out gliders. It was a very happy time back then.
It is. These are little balsa wood, except they're made out of plastic, I guess, flyers that you would give to a kid. But now they're all gold.
Exactly.
Which you would think the orphans could use, actually. So, yeah. You know, that's actually useful.
but it's the rioting. It's the rioting it causes.
Oh, the rioting to get to the gold. Oh, that's
But
horrible.
See, this is different. They're not with the orphans anymore. The next day, they're just at the Metropolis Fair.
Because there's always a fair in Metropolis.
Exactly.
It's like New York. Where's their place to hold a fair?
So, of course, there's a riot as people, you know, chase after these now gold gliders. Golden gliders. That could be like a supervillain.
Ooh, it could be. You know, I wonder if one of the Flash villains could be called Golden Glider at some point.
I think that would be genius.
I think that would be wonderful. We should tell Jeff Johns about that.
I think he'd love it. Anyway, and here's the interesting thing, and this is, you know, this is Cosmic King making with the brilliant twist. He takes a Superman statue and turns it into kryptonite and it topples right on top of Superman.
Well, I want to know, what was it made out of at the beginning? Is it marble? It's just white. I thought for a second he had turned into a pillar of salt.
So, of course, they carry Superman a safe distance away from the kryptonite. But I'm looking at the size of that statue. That's a hefty chunk of kryptonite.
Totally. I'm thinking Lex should have at least, you know, carted that off at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
Put that into storage for another day.
It can chip away little chunks of this and use it. It'll be beautiful. Then there's this crazy squid-like monster in Metropolis the next day. You know, these days have been crazy. Sorry. Superman says that he's going to arrange for the statue to be coated with lead and sunk at sea.
Oh, but still, sorry.
Yeah, see, that wouldn't fly now because, you know.
Exactly. That doesn't fly at all.
The lead leaching into the water. You
into
know,
the kitties.
It's no good.
As they peel the paint off of it and eat it.
And then there's kryptonite under there.
Exactly.
So this monster is basically stalking the streets and, of course, picks up Lois Lane, who was trying to photograph it because apparently Jimmy Olsen, busy that day.
And Jimmy has, you know, a busy social calendar.
He does. He does indeed. And
he's busy being a turtle boy and then Elastic Lad and Rainy Olsen or whatever.
Exactly. It's Rainy Olsen and Grumpy Olsen and...
And Dopey Olsen, all the Olsons, Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen. I don't know.
Which issue was that? okay, so of course this creature that contains Lois goes flying up, in all the way to another solar system. And gets into a deep pit on a small planet, and of course Superman gets down there, and it turns out it was an illusion.
Ooh, illusions.
And Superman is stuck in a kryptonite force screen. It's terribly weakening and, ouch, painful.
It's ouchy. Maybe he needs a Band-Aid.
But by the way, way back on one of the early pages when they were doing the... page 4. I forgot during Cosmic King's origin when he stumbles into that Fantastic Ray. He says, "Choke! What will the Ray do to me? Will it kill me?"
Oh, he did. He choked. Okay, here's our rule. Okay, the Legion of Substitute Podcasters drinking game. If someone says choke, that's at least a sip.
Absolutely.
At least a sip, people.
And then when we complain about Byrne retconning Superboy out of the Legion, that's like a good guzzle.
You think that's a guzzle? Because that's going to happen a lot more as we go on.
It really is. I didn't say I was going to play the game.
Oh, well. At least not while we're recording.
Exactly. Anyway, so this lead panel glides upward because it had to be lead so that he couldn't see through it. And Saturn Queen tells him that he's a fool. She tricked him with an illusion that she created with her power of super hypnotism.
Indeed.
So they've got Superman in here, and much like that little voting booth that they had back in Adventure 247, or at least on the cover, but they've got
Completely
it for real
Cosmic
here.
King with the goldfish bowl on his head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's a baggy suit, just like Cosmic Boys was in the original story. But they, instead of yes or no, their options are life or death.
And guess which way they went.
Yeah, they all vote death. And of course, Luthor, still in his prison grays, you know, he didn't think to ask his new friends for the future for, you know, a new outfit, like maybe a really cool purple suit with some high collars, a couple of bandoliers, you know. Anyway, he said, you know, you've thwarted my schemes with your superpowers, but now I've got allies who also have superpowers. Man, he's messing with them. So, but then the great thing is, fortunately, Superman has friends in this era. And he says, "Courage, Superman. We've trailed the supervillains here from the future." And we get the original founding members of the Legion. Cosmic Boy, Lightning Lad, and Saturn Girl. Oh, no, wait.
grown up now.
That's right. It says, gasp, it's the Legion of Superheroes. They were teenagers the last time I saw them. They've grown up into adults now.
It's Lightning Man and Cosmic Man, and I don't know what Saturn Girl's. I guess it's Saturn Woman. Yeah,
yep.
Saturn Woman.
Yep. So they come, they get in there and you know, wearing their jetpacks, and Lightning Man and, you know, they're throwing the electric bolts at each other, Lightning Man and Lightning Lord, and, you know, Superman can only watch there in that Kryptonite 4 screen that's ouch painful. And and yeah, you were right. Cosmic Boy is totally rocking the it's interesting because they had reversed this on that splash page, as you said. Mm-hmm. He uses his magnetic power, or his magnetic eyes in this case, to hurl the metal object at Cosmic King, and of course Cosmic King uses his eyes to transmute it into dust, and he's unharmed. Of course, so we got Saturn Girl, or Saturn Woman, sorry, who has kind of got a weird hairstyle going on here herself. and she's, you know, you can see that she's sort of at a stalemate with Saturn Queen, and she's trying to mentally command her to surrender.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
No, exactly. And so they're basically at a stalemate here. You know, there's no one's getting any further than
Luthor. Yeah, they're all canceling each other out. No one's making any headway here.
Exactly. But you know, Luthor, he's like, hey, I got the trump card. He says, unless you guys quit battling the villains, I am going to pull this switch and Superman will be quickly destroyed by increased kryptonite exposure.
And you know what this reminds me of, Paul?
What's that?
One more move and the cake gets it.
It really is. Oh God, it really is, isn't it?
It's basically that scene.
That's awesome. We're, of course, referencing a scene from the awesome DC Comics Presents issue 89? No.
No, 50-something. It's the Legion of Superheroes.
58?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, somewhere around there. Anyway, it's the one we've talked about several times, the Legion of Substitute Heroes team up with Superman and Ambush Bugs in it, and it is... It is a whole bunch of pages of comic book greatness.
To use a 1980s ism, it's choice, people.
Oh, nice. Well done.
You like that one?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Totally choice.
God, I haven't heard that in so long.
we could do 90s. That's slamming dope, yo. No?
Okay. Best not. No. Best not.
Sorry.
So, you know, then of course here's Luthor always underestimating the heroism of anyone.
Heroes,
you know. I mean, you know. Well, basically, the thing is, you know, and this is kind of a classic Luthor trope, is he expects everyone to think the way he does, and he says, you know, if you guys are so blasted heroic, snicker, why doesn't one of you volunteer to die in Superman's place? And, you know, the villains think this is hilarious. Yeah, you guys pretend to be heroes, but they'd never sacrifice themselves for him. Well, the heroes, they get together, they draw lots, and Saturn Woman draws the shortest straw. So she is going to have the honor of dying in Superman's place. And
so where did they get the straw from? That's a question.
You know, it's probably, it's how they light the pilot light in the jetpacks.
Oh, that's good. I like that. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, you know, the villains are just aghast. You know, they can't believe that someone's actually willing to sacrifice themselves for him. And Superman, of course, is no, I won't let you do it. But, you know, hey, that's what it is. Luthor's like, if she's foolish enough to want to die for you, that's what it's, that, you know, so be it. This death ray will destroy her. So, anyway, so basically Superman decides he's going to be, you know, this is what Superman's all about. You know, okay, all right, she's going to die in my place, so can I at least do one last thing in her honor? And there's a bit of debate of the, come on, you think we're stupid? Are you trying to fool us? And, but Luthor, again, you know, he knows his arch foe. He says, I know he'll keep his word. I'll free him from the kryptonite power screen, and his pitiful super deed will amuse us before Saturn Woman dies. So what does he do?
He builds a shovel.
he constructs a giant shovel first. And they say this, you know, reaching the planet, he decides to go to Saturn. He says, reaching the planet Saturn, Superman constructs a giant shovel. And what he does is he takes a bunch of the meteor fragments that form Saturn's rings and flies them back to the to this little planetoid and makes a ring around the planet. And you know, this is this is a neat example of how they, you know, again, you forget how deft they were at, you know, placing just a little fact in a story somewhere and being able to call it back for a solution. And mm-hmm. and I think this is something, it's certainly something that Siegel excelled at. And, you know, it was kind of the de rigueur for Superman stories of that era, you know, again, speaking of the Weisinger era, where it was, you know, you'd have these little things where something was going on and there'd be, you know, like you'd almost expect, and actually it is here, you know, it says, you know, minutes later, and he says, unless I'm very wrong, Saturn Woman won't die now. And the caption says, can you guess why? And you used to get that a lot in these, you know, have you figured it out yet, reader?
Have you figured out the identity of blah, blah, blah? Or, you know, any of those types of tropes that used to happen in these books.
Exactly. I mean, and those are kind of the things that, you know, when I read these things, that they're the bits I really love, where it's like, yeah, you know, I love the way they used to talk to the audience.
And of course, there would be a, you know, three or at least half a page of some sort of ad for either Grit magazine or Grit newspaper, whatever it was called,
yes.
Or X-ray specs, or, you know, something insanely, you know, kiddish at the time. I long for the day of those Hostess fruit pie.
Absolutely.
You know, comics again. I just want someone to publish a trade of those.
Oh my God. It'd be beautiful. Beautiful. You know,
just for the retroness of it. I mean,
exactly.
Wow.
You know, and the Grit stuff, it's just like, there's something about that, you know. I mean, I don't know anyone who ever actually read Grit, but apparently you could make a bundle selling it.
Oh, totally. You could make a ton of money selling them.
Exactly. So he has Saturn Woman take a look up in the sky and see the ring. And she says, it reminds me of my homeworld, Saturn. Again, they're playing kind of fast and loose here because, of course, as we know, she's actually, you know, technically she's from a moon of Saturn. She's from Titan. So, of course, you know, Luthor's got no time for this. He's like, you know, you want to die, you're going to die. And then,
suddenly,
the unprecedented happens. Saturn Queen turns on her teammates and Luthor, and with her power of super hypnotism, commands them to become temporarily paralyzed. And
then Superman has the Velma moment.
Yes, you see, Timmy. And basically explains everything. You know, when Saturn Queen told me her origin, it struck me that there must have been some reason for crime not existing on Saturn. Examining Saturn's rings with my supervision, I discovered that radiations from it cancel out Saturn people's criminal traits. You'll recall, Saturn Queen didn't become a criminal until after she left Saturn's rings behind her and came to Earth. Thus, the meteor rings from Saturn I formed about this planet had an immediate effect of curing Saturn Queen of her villainous tendencies, and that's why she saved Saturn Woman. So there you have it. You know, they.
And I think this is the only appearance of Saturn Queen as a member of the Legion of Supervillains. I think she appears in a couple of issues.
Yeah.
After this, but I think that she's solo at that point.
You know, it's interesting.
I could be wrong. Someone check me, but she's not in the Eye for an Eye story with the Legion of Supervillains, and she's not in the big, the colossal failure story of the revamp of the Legion of Supervillains.
Right.
That happened that gave us Chemical King and Timberwolf. So I think that's her villainous appearance at this point.
Did she not appear in
the
adult?
I could be
wrong. I wonder if she appeared in the Adult Legion story. I'm not sure.
Yeah, she could be in there. She could be in there. That's maybe one I'm remembering.
But very few appearances. You know, she was not sort of and when you read her now, it's just like, wow, how did they miss out on this one?
And yeah, maybe, well, you know, they took her off Saturn, apparently.
Well, there you go. And so Superman gives her a small meteor chunk from the rings to keep on her at all times so that she'll always be good. And then they point Lightning Man points out something very interesting. He says, "How clever! You kept your word. You didn't save Saturn Woman. Saturn Queen did, because he, of course, was made to promise, you know, and give his word that he would not try to save Saturn Woman, and technically he didn't."
That's true.
You know, Superman never lies.
No, never.
So of
that's
course,
about his secret identity to Lois in every issue.
Yeah, well, there's that. Shortly as the superhero's time machine takes the supervillains back to their own era, Superman flies toward Earth with Luthor, and he's got one of those little bubbles, just like the one that that Superboy was carrying Lana Lang around in when they went to Xanthu. And you know, Superman's sure that the law courts of the future will be lenient with Saturn Queen, you know, because she's turned good now. It wasn't her fault.
Yeah, it all makes sense now.
And I love this. For some reason, you know, Luthor goes back to prison. And I guess, you know, he gets to repair radios still, because they still haven't learned.
No.
You know, forget about going through back issues. You know, just turn back to page one. You know, it's right there.
Did you people not pay attention to what happened here?
Come on, Warden. You know, you couldn't read the rest of the script? Come on. So, of course, Lightning Man replies, and he says, "Don't waste your time on any more appeals to the Legion of Supervillains, Luthor. Its members are jailed, too, like you."
Like you. Oh, that's pathos.
So there we go. That is the Legion of Supervillains' first appearance. And you know, it's like you say. I mean, it is definitely the most advanced art that we've seen yet on the Legion.
Well, it's our first villains. It is the first Legion villains showing up. I mean, Luthor had that one in the Kryptonite Men, but really.
But that was pretty minor.
Luthor's not technically a quote-unquote Legion villain. He's a Superman villain.
Because
so.
When you think about it, we've had, the Starboy story. We've only had a few stories where we've actually got a team of Legionnaires, and they've all been recruitment drives.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the ones where they guest starred in a story like Starboy did, like... when Mon-El showed up, technically, I sometimes question, you know, was he originally intended to be a Legionnaire? Was that always the plan they had for him?
I think he was a character who just kind of showed up and they thought,
that'd be kind of neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, and it was even a different writer sort of outside of the usual bunch, but, you know, basically, Siegel had written a lot of these stories, and they were mainly, they were mainly recruitment drive stories. And so this was different. This was really the first time that we saw the Legion in action against villains. You know, we saw them stopping disasters. We rarely saw them actually stopping criminals.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, except for Superboy, of course, because he had the potential to be a criminal. So
that's true.
Yeah. So there we go. That's the Legion of Supervillains taken care of. Do you want to move on to the next story?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, let's do that one, and then we'll wrap it up. The next
Here
story.
Here comes the sun. Do 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 do.
Oh,
here comes the sun. I say. Oh, sorry.
We're gonna get sued.
Are we? Oh God.
No.
My singing is not that good. Come on. I mean, no way am I making money off that. Come on.
So this issue is Adventure Comics 290. Now this is significant because we're 10 months away from something pretty significant in Legion's history.
We are. And you know, I think I tried to do some research, mm-hmm. and if it's the same event I think you're thinking about, I can't find an example of this happening prior to this date. Not with as major characters we're talking.
Hmm. You can flesh that out a bit.
I can?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Are we talking about Lightning Lad?
Oh, actually, no, I wasn't. What I actually was referring to specifically was the fact that, they've been sort of appearing as guest stars mainly in Superboy and Superman stories. And you know, even the other appearances were like, Supergirl.
I see what you're talking about.
Technically,
yeah.
Supergirl stories, but really, the Legion wasn't getting their own stories, and they would actually get their own run, coming up in a little while. But with Adventure Comics 300, I mean, that's not no huge secret. But the fact is, you know, they were appearing as guest stars, and so this is one of the one of the times where, you know, it's still a Superboy story, but we're still a little ways away from actually seeing a Legion story. But we're getting closer. We're getting closer. We're within a year.
Before New Year's rings in, we promise we'll get to our first real Legion story.
Indeed. And so this one came out November of 1961. The cover is, of course, penciled by Kurt Swan and inked by Stan Kay. And, you know, and this kind of leads credence to that whole idea where I was saying, you know, maybe he just did Superboy covers a lot simpler, because this is a much simpler style.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. So the story inside is The Secret of the Seventh Superhero, written by Robert Bernstein, who was also the writer on that first Mon-El story, and with art by George Papp, who was also the artist on that. So, you know, and we've seen George Papp on a few Legion stories here and there. And
he's an old standby now at this point.
Exactly. So, but we're actually seeing a whole bunch of pictures of Legionnaires on the cover. So, you know, this is promising. And this brings back Sunboy, who was one of the applicants in an earlier issue, who didn't get in to Legion.
Because they picked someone else that year.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, definitely before they realized, hey, maybe we need to, you know, let a few more people in. So,
hard to have a Legion with only 10 members, you know.
Exactly. And it took us 10 years to get that many. So in this, of course, you know, this is actually kind of interesting, because we start this issue and you've got a thought balloon coming out of a speeding freight train. And he says, "Yes, sir, I'm going to put hundreds of miles between me and the state reform school." But it looks like Clark Kent who is thinking this.
It does look like Clark Kent. And the first time I read this, I was like, why is Clark Kent in reform school? And I figured Red Kryptonite was to blame.
It usually is.
Exactly. So,
or the time trapper.
Oh, well, yeah.
Always the time trapper. Anyway, so he manages to get kicked out of the train. It turns out, though, his name is actually Tom Tanner, and he's just broken out of a boys' reform school, and he's an exact double of Clark Kent.
Well, not exact.
Well, no. There's, you know, he may look like him, but yeah.
There's some ethical issues here.
Indeed. So he pushes through to into Smallville, and you know, Chief Parker is driving by and happens to see him, wonders why he's going to school so early, and is worried about him because his jacket's torn. And I love this. Here's some great Double Indemnity style dialogue. "This copper has me confused with someone else. I better play along before he gets suspicious." I almost expect him to say, "Cheese it, it's the cops."
"Officer Krupke, what are you doing here?"
Oh, man.
1960s Broadway reference. Look
very
it up.
Nice. Okay. Very nice.
And can I say it, Paul? Can I say it?
Do it, please.
Whew, what a boner I pulled. Sentences you can't say in today's comics.
Where is that one?
That is on the second panel of the top page of it's number 3 on the story.
There it
is.
It's
in his thought balloon.
There it is. You know, that's one of the ones for superdickery.com for sure.
Oh, I love superdickery.com. That's another website that we're going to have to give some props to at some point, because
definitely.
Dang. That's just funny.
Absolutely. So yeah, good old Tom Tanner, you know, he's gotten all mixed up. He's heading the wrong direction. What luck that he actually came to a town where someone who looks exactly like him lives.
And it's karma. You know.
Absolutely, you know, and everyone totally thinks that he is the real Clark Kent, and even though he's behaving very strangely, you know, he ends up going into the house and he gets into the secret workshop, and now we're actually seeing the real Clark Kent, and so you know, Clark, you know, he got up early and breakfast isn't ready yet, so he puts together some work on a science project on magnets. And, you know, turns on the news and hears something about a strange object landing with a blinding electrical flash just west of Maple Grove. And he uses his supervision, and it looks like one of the Legion's time bubbles. So he decides.
And he uses his handy dandy back door.
Yeah, exactly.
The trap door in the basement that goes into the backyard of Kent's farmstead or house at this point, wherever they're actually living.
By this point, they had moved to Smallville proper, and and Pa Kent was running the general store.
The general store. Yeah. Yeah.
So of course that's okay though, because he's got a whole bunch of Superboy robots, as well as some Clark robots, and even you'll see there's a Ma and Pa Kent robot back there, and you know, you never know when you're gonna need to substitute for someone. So, but something seems to be wrong with the robot. There seems to be some kind of problem with all of them. You know, the blinding electrical flash must have short circuited them. So the robots are no good to him. What's he going to do?
Not use flash photography near the animatronics.
So, of course, Mrs. Kent hears good old Tom Tanner messing about with the milk on the porch, and Ma invites him in, thinking that it's actually Clark, and you know, tells him to go to his room and get out his books. So he goes up there, and you know, he figures, oh well, Clark must have run away from home, so I'll take his place. So he totally takes his place. You know, he gets into Clark's clothes. You know, the old red V-neck sweater with the white shirt and bow tie under it,
and the blue jeans, looking very much like Tom Welling.
Exactly, and down he goes. He has some pancakes, and he can't understand why Clark Kent would run away when his mom. Oh, you know, I mean, Mrs. Kent, she sure can make some great pancakes.
She's just doting all over him, isn't she?
And I think he's really loving it a little bit. So, of course, you know, Tom has realized, hey, this is a pretty good gig. I'm going to, you know, I could, like, totally take over this guy's life. I could be Clark Kent.
He totally could be Clark Kent too.
Absolutely. I mean, you know,
for that darn personality getting in the way.
You know, it's the, you know, once you got the red V-neck, you know, you're all ready to be Clark Kent. So
until Pa asks you to lift the truck again, so
then a little bit of a dead giveaway. So of course, 50 miles away from Smallville in Maple Grove, or just outside Maple Grove, Superboy lands and sees this glowing boy, and you know, he's emitting that blinding radiance, and that is of course our friend Sunboy, who we saw back in one of the Supergirl stories, and basically he knew that news would, you know, I just kind of showed up and knew that news would spread up quickly, so you'd show up. Again, the Legionnaires, they really didn't care about the space-time continuum.
No, not in the early days. They're like, here I am, come find me.
Yeah, exactly. And he says, you know, glad to meet you, but please close the door of your time machine. You know, he's saying it's knocked out every electrical object for miles around. And he said, you know, I'd have arrived here sooner if I hadn't had to stop and repair short circuit generators and power stations along the way. Well, some boy had no
bastard.
Idea.
Bastard.
Gosh, I'm sorry, Superboy. He had no idea.
Brainiac 5 didn't think to tell him, hey, by the way, I keep the door closed.
Yeah, exactly. So here's something interesting. He says about, you know, using the superpowers to help him carry out an important mission. He says, you see, each year, the Legion of Superheroes admits only one new member, the applicant who performs the most spectacular super feat. Well, this year, I was selected in a competition held outside our clubhouse. He says, gasp, what radiance, he's like a human sun. And he talks about and actually we get a bit of his origin, and again it's like we discussed in that last issue. You know, it's like you basically put the basic concept out there, details can be fleshed out later.
Totally.
You know, and so we get the basics of it, and you know, then we'll get so much more detail later on. But you know, it's really sort of here it says it was an accident. You know, and that was kind of where they were going with it initially. And of course, we know that went a whole other way. But you know, still kind of neat.
Well, I think Dirk at first did think it was an accident.
Well, that's interesting.
And then it was revealed later that it was sabotage.
So, of course, he gets initiated. And it seems that Sunboy, always glowing. you know, his powers were very different at this point. You know, I mean, it was even on, you know, in the little things that have their powers listed, it was super brilliance.
Yes.
And not in the Brainiac 5 kind of way.
No, super radiance and super brilliance. Yeah. And
yeah, exactly.
If the lights go out, he's the Legionnaire you call.
Well, apparently he's always, you know, he's always glowing. So, you know, that's what it looks like anyway. And, so, you know, of course, later his powers would evolve to be more sort of heat and, you know, basically being able to throw flame, all that kind of stuff, you know, to generate incredible heat and that sort of thing. So that's kind of neat how they sort of, you know, carried that on a bit further. So, anyway, that basically there's he needs to go back to the past and have Superboy help him locate this terrible weapon. Here's an interesting thing. So Lightning Lad's giving out the assignment. Would this be sort of during the Cosmic Boy as leader time period, or?
Well, all this would have been during Cosmic Boy's leadership, but perhaps he had the Brawlian flu that day.
Well, he's sitting there. He's right across the table. But you know, no, it just seemed interesting that it was Lightning Lad who was giving out the mission. And
well, I mean, at this point in the Legion, it may have been considered the Lightning Lad was more popular. I mean, they did use him in that solo adventure.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you want to have him step up to the plate a little more at this point.
Exactly.
And be a little more important. I think when I was reading Legion, Lightning Lad was way more popular than Cosmic Boy. Although, after a while, you began to feel a little, you know, love for Cosmic Boy because he was the steady elder statesman of the Legion, not the hothead. Like Lightning Lad is so.
Exactly, and I mean, you know, and the first name says it all. You know, Cosmic Boy was the Rock, and you know, and you really, again, coming back to that 5-year gap stuff. You know, you really got that. I think in those first couple of issues, they fleshed out Rock so beautifully, and really just, you know, made you understand this is why this guy was in charge. You know, this is why the Legion sprang out around this guy and his friends.
Rock is one of the best Legionnaires, and when he finally leaves the book, it shows.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really does show.
Anyway, so they've got this weapon, and they basically take it apart, and they had taken this apart, you know, ages before, and. You know, this brilliant criminal scientist had invented this weapon intending to use it against humanity, but he died shortly after we discovered the weapon's existence. So what they did is they dismantled it, and they put each part of it in a separate lead-covered chest, which had their name on it. So, you know, when they dug it up, I guess they would know which one it was.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Lightning Lad's got the one that is labeled with his face on it and his name.
And they have Saturn Girl and Chameleon Boy and Brainiac 5 and Phantom Girl and Cosmic Boy are all there. And they're all taking their little lead chests off somewhere.
So here's something that's interesting. They have gone into the past to dump this stuff. You know, you think of the crises that we have with, you know, waste disposal these days, you know, where it's like the landfill, it's like, you know, oh, well, we're going to go to, like, you know, we're going to go to another state and, you know, put that there. And, you know, let Michigan deal with it. And
maybe that's our problem. Maybe the 21st century is dumping their trash here in the 21st century.
Like, we haven't got enough of it to worry about. Now they're dumping all their
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly.
Crazy. So at some point, you know, they had the brilliant idea that, wait a second, what if a criminal from the 20th century locates all six of them and puts them together? And, you know, if they know anything about the Legion, they'll just say, you know, wait until we've got like a complete set. You know, I've got a Lightning Lad. I'm looking for a Saturn Girl. You know, oh, so, you know, I saw a Brainiac 5 on eBay. And I'm gonna get me that, and then I'm gonna build.
Now, Brainiac 5 is on Craigslist, not eBay.
of course. So, but that's okay because Lightning Lad gives him a diagram and shows him, you know, basically, you know, this is what the whole thing looks like, and you know, basically, they've got to bring back all these weapon parts, bring them back to the future, and so they can basically house it safely. But then there seems to be something going on here.
Yeah, Sunboy's having a little personality issue, isn't he?
He
The fool.
You know, I mean, if he had a mustache, he would be twirling it right then.
You know, that is Snidely Whiplash right there with red hair.
Exactly. So, he's like, okay, we'll gather up the different parts, but I just want to let my mom know that that's what I'm gonna do, so she doesn't worry. They didn't have cell phones back then, so he had to fly back at super speed.
And
But
who does
then,
he discover at super speed?
look who it is. It's Clark Kent leaving to walk to school. He's like, wait a second, this guy's got my mom and Lana all fooled. And at first he's like, I really should expose this guy. But then again, and it's kind of like, well, this is a problem because this guy's pretending to be me, and so something should be up there. But my robots aren't working, so he'll
They'll
make.
take advantage of it, right?
Oh yeah, exactly. He's like, this way I can, I'm okay with playing hooky. And because that's what they did back then, they played hooky.
They still play hooky.
Oh, of course they still play hooky, but they just call it different things. But
That's
back
true.
then, they totally played hooky, and that's because they were totally walking down to the creek with the fishing rods. You know
Oh, well, in Kansas, yeah. What else is there to do?
it. So, he's not worried about. Here's what's interesting. There's no danger of my folks blurting out the secret of my Superboy identity to him either. I'll be home long before he returns from school. So whoever he is, he's doing me a favor by masquerading as Clark Kent. And it's just kind of an interesting thing. It's like, yeah, that would have been the one worrying point. Again, it's like you say, all you need is Pa asking for him to lift the truck up.
Yep, that's it.
Anyway,
It
so
when he was like 3, so why can't he do it now that he's 15? Come on.
exactly. So it turns out they were kidding around with Clark, and Clark, let's face it, he goes to school, he plays the milquetoast, right? And so they kind of, I think someone actually went straight to the double dog dare here. And Clark jumps over the wall and they say, wow,
I
he's
triple dog dare you.
oh, that's a serious broach of breach. That's a serious breach of
It's a serious
protocol.
breach of playground etiquette.
Exactly. And if it was a brooch, then you'd be able to wear it. But anyway, so here's the thing though, Ed, and this is interesting. I don't think this has ever happened in a Superboy story ever. Lana notices that he's acting peculiarly and thinks, hey, wait a second. I've always suspected he was Superboy. Maybe I can prove it this morning. A Superboy
And so what
story.
does Lana do? She gives a guy a pair of scissors to cut Superboy's hair with, or Clark's hair with. So we have weapons in school and violence amongst the student body. It was the 50s,
And
right?
meanwhile, the hero, he's playing hooky.
Exactly.
So this guy
Comics
tried.
Code Authority, where are you?
So basically, she knows that, hey, the scissors are gonna break because so we'll, this will be my proof that Clark Kent is actually Superboy. So, but the thing is, Eddie goes up to him and tries to snip a lock of his hair, and he doesn't know. This is Tom Tanner, man. Tom Tanner, he puts up with none of this.
No,
If you've got
no.
some pancakes for him,
Oh,
okay,
he's all
he's
there.
oh, he's totally there. But
He's
try and
all
cut
about
his
the maple
hair,
syrup.
try and cut his hair, whatever. No, he punches the guy. What are you, a wise guy or something? Again, he totally speaks in film noir dialogue.
Meanwhile, Super is running around the earth picking up all these packages.
And again, naturally, Cosmic Boys is under the polar ice cap because, of course, he's got magnetic powers. So, of course, he would put his near the magnetic pole. Sorry, I was just pausing to leave you room for magnetic pole.
Sorry, too easy.
and then the then now, so he goes to find Saturn Girls, and it doesn't seem as clever. Hers is just in the deepest part of the Pacific Ocean. But see, here's what happened. She's got sea monsters that she hypnotized to guard it. So these poor sea monsters are
And
like,
I think Aquaman would have a problem with that.
I think so. He'd get the Atlantis Civil Liberties Union right, going after the Legion. So he sets, excuse me, Cosmic Boy's box on the Coral Island and dives down for hers, and managed to get away, fortunately, because he is invulnerable. But you know, you gotta wonder, like, you know, is there like a lost story somewhere where the sea monsters climb to the surface and say, you know, hey, we're still trying to protect our weapon.
And they come crawling across the Kansas plains.
Because all of a sudden I've got them being like the guy in Preacher who counts all the grains of sand.
Right.
So anyway, so he delivers the two chests to Sun Boy, and Sun Boy's like, the fool's in real trouble when I, you know, his real trouble will begin when I assemble the parts.
Parts is parts.
Yeah. So we head back to school. And, you know, Tom Tanner, he's sitting in class. He's really kind of interested. You know, he's like, hey, this is kind of fun. And, he says, I almost wish I were Clark Kent so I could keep coming back to school to learn more things. And he gets out there, plays some baseball, and apparently still red sweater, bow tie. That's how they played baseball back then. And I'm just trying to think. So this would have been 61. So if we figure 13 years difference, so 48. So we're just after wartime here in Smallville.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, and so Superman or Superboy has unearthed the last two chests and brings them over to Sun Boy, and Sun Boy, you know, he's all, you know, to his face, he's all, oh yeah, no, don't you worry, Superboy, I'll figure this all out. And of course, you know, Superboy is wondering what's in these boxes because, of course, he can't see through them because they're lead.
Which should have been his first clue that something wasn't
Something's
right.
up, yeah. And you know, again, with the you know, with the trading card pictures of the Legionnaires on it. So, of course, it turns out, he says, little does he realize, when I assemble all six parts, they'll form the only weapon which can destroy Superboy.
Doomsday? No.
Wait, really? So of course he says, no, you know what? I was gonna show you what's in here, but I better not, because the Legion might be kinda angry if I assemble the parts without their permission. Better load them aboard the time machine and return to the future. So Superboy, ever the helpful friend and fellow member of the Legion, gives him a hand getting them into the time bubble. Because, you know, they're like lead. That's gotta be heavy.
Yeah, that's heavy. That's pretty heavy.
And so, you know, Sunboy says to him, you know, I and the Legion of Superheroes sure appreciate what you've done. And I start thinking here, it's like, you know, Superboy's like, why, don't mention it, Sunboy. Have a good trip back to the 30th century. So
meanwhile, back at stately Kent Manor.
So, of course, there's a he was saying no, this won't happen, it won't be a problem, you know, no one will give away my identity. But of course the frying pan catches fire, and Martha says to him, you know, put this out with your super breath. And he says, my what? And she says, this is no time for joking, Clark. As Superboy, you can use one of your many superpowers to put out that fire. My mother used to speak to me with in exposition as well.
My mom only just uses all of my name. And then I usually know it's safest to run in the opposite direction, no matter what it is.
There you go. And you know, I'm trying to remember what, if they ever gave Clark a middle name back in the Silver Age. I don't know. So
oh, I think he's got one. Hold on. I would think he's, keep reading, I'll see.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so basically, you know, Tom Tanner, actually pretty smart. You know, of course, Clark didn't expect him to be back so early. And Ma has unwittingly revealed his secret identity. And, you know, Tom puts it all together. He figures it all out. He's like, wait a second, I didn't do anything. The fire must have gone out by itself. And he explains. He says, I'm not Clark Kent, alias Superboy. He says, I'm Tom Tanner, who busted out from reform school this morning. Now you've got to be careful, because, you know, back in these days, if you find out Superman or Superboy's identity, you don't tend to last to the last page of the story. So,
I have his name.
Oh,
it is Clark Joseph Kent.
Ah, yes. Of course. Joe Shuster.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Was it that in the Silver Age?
It is on Wikipedia as his alter ego. So
cool.
It doesn't define age, though.
Yeah. You know what I've really got to do is dig deeper at some point in the Krypton Companion, also from Tomorrow's. Actually, I don't know if we actually have talked about any of the Tomorrow stuff specifically yet. I mean, we talked about the Legion Outpost book a little while back, but yeah, the Krypton Companion. You know, again, for fans of the Weisinger era, I keep saying area, the Weisinger era.
It was a big area.
It was. You know, if you put all of them end to end, it would be massive.
It's a lot of comic.
Positively
it's a lot of comic.
Massive. Anyway, so basically, you know, he says, because I look like Clark, you mistook me for him and let me in your house. Well, I like being Clark Kent. I'm not giving up my new life. Expose me and I'll reveal Clark Kent's secret identity. Yeah, he's totally, as Clark says, he's got them over a barrel.
And not in a happy way.
No, exactly. And meanwhile, Sunboy is putting together the 6 dismantled sections of a robot's body. And I noticed that the logo was gone from his costume, which, you know, back in the day for Legionnaire, that meant they were evil.
Yeah, once your emblem is gone, you're not a Legionnaire anymore. they spend a lot of time ripping those emblems off.
and here we go. He's putting together Cyclops the Robot. Once again, the Legion begat all things X-Men. Not just Nightcrawler. Oh, no. So anyway, basically, it turns out this Cyclops robot has an eye that emits a ray that has the power to change good people into evil and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so there you have it. So anyway, so he says, you know, look for the home of Clark Kent. You know, by now the Boy of Steel must have changed his secret identity. And he, of course, learned Superboy's secret by eavesdropping on conversations of the other superheroes. So, you know, basically the whole plan is, you know, turn the ray on Clark Kent and make him evil. So he says, whoever assembles me is my master, and I therefore obey thee, Master Sunboy. This robot,
indeed.
He's a fancy talker, this robot.
Well, you know, they're all formal at this point.
Exactly. So
we haven't gotten to the what would you call it, the outright rebellion of R2-D2 yet.
Indeed. So of course, he gets to the Kent house, and here's what's interesting. You know, he's basically... He, you know, uses the ray to turn, which turns evil people into good and good people into evil. So he decides he's going to turn Clark evil, and he zaps Clark out front of the Kent house.
The ray comes on.
Yeah. So Sunboy's very pleased, there's Superboy, and he figures, hey, now he's going to be evil. And, you know, he's ripping out telephone poles. Like, you know, he's definitely evil. Hey, maybe we can rule the universe. And, you know, Superboy seems to be on this mad destructive rampage. And Krypto comes flying in, woofing away. And it's like, hey, let's make him an evil super hound. So, but
that would rock.
It would totally rock. Evil super hound? Whatever.
Someone who's good as evil super monkey. Almost.
Nothing is ever as good as evil super monkey.
Exactly. Everything's better with monkeys and ninjas and pirates.
And if you're able to work all of them in, it's the best thing ever written.
It's the best thing ever.
next to Nobody Moves or The Cake Gets It.
Oh, that's true. I mean, that is the pinnacle. Oh my gosh. Anyway.
So just as Cyclops is about to turn Krypto into an evil super hound, Superboy actually, you know, he uses the heat of his X-ray vision, because that's what his heat vision was back in those days. It was the heat that was generated by the X-rays that he created.
Exactly, and he melts Cyclops down.
Yeah, and
there goes a Legion villain right there.
And as it
many panels did he last?
Exactly, but here's what's really interesting, is Sunboy is suddenly back in his regular costume, and I guess he changed back into it just as Superboy was flying in. Because on page 12, he's in, you know, he's got the collar, but he's got like the little Robin Hood string over the neckline.
Mm-hmm.
And no logo. Now he's got the logo back.
Yeah, the logo came back.
And so he's kind of shocked, but it turns out that, you know, what he wanted to do was to make sure that, you know, he went on this rampage to allay any suspicion that Cyclops hadn't made Clark Kent evil. I didn't want you to bombard me a second time with that ray. And, of course, knowing that the robot had a few grains of kryptonite, he didn't want to be affected by those. And so, you know, what happens is he's really confused. I mean, I ordered Cyclops to make Clark Kent the opposite of his real nature. Yes, but it wasn't him.
Yep, Cyclops fit the wrong Clark.
Crazy, crazy. So, of course, with all this happening, you know, Tom Tanner actually really did him a big favor.
Yeah, totally. Or else we'd have evil Superboy. Wait. We kind of do, don't we?
Evil Superboy. Why, that's crazy.
Maybe that's it. Maybe Superboy Prime is Tom Tanner.
You know what? You know
that's
what?
That's too simple.
We kind of know that he isn't from the...
Did we just find a way for Geoff Johns to redeem him, though? Rebuild Cyclops, the robot?
Who will turn him good.
Exactly.
I tell you.
Oh, okay. If we get to the end of Legion 3 Worlds and that's what happens, I'm tearing up the book.
Seriously. And, of course, we know that we're going through the time stream because Rainbow and Years. These years are on sheets of paper.
And 1996 is there.
Yeah. And I think 1972 from the looks of it at the bottom there.
Yeah, in 2016, not that far from here.
Seriously.
And we're getting older every time we see a rainbow tunnel of time.
They were like, boy, that's far in the future. So he takes him back, and it actually turns out, you know, hey, Tom Tanner, you know, he was the target of the ray, and he became good. He's no longer a juvenile delinquent who belongs in reform school. And it's interesting because it really seemed in those early pages of the story like they were redeeming him. You know, mm-hmm. where basically it's like, you know, I'm kind of liking this school thing. This is good. You know, maybe there's something here for me, that kind of thing. Anyway, they go to the planet Xanthu, where all the Legionnaires are. Isn't that interesting?
Which doesn't make any sense. When have all the Legionnaires ever been on Xanthu? But okay.
It's almost, again, it's that whole, what was that thing with the Legion again? Which century were they in? I don't know.
Exactly. No one kept good notes.
Exactly. And so it's like, you know what? Oh, I read that issue where they went to Xanthu. Yeah, that's the one. Okay. So anyway, but here was the trick. It's all about the secret handshake.
Indeed.
And when they were saying goodbye, he totally knew that some boy was messing around because he didn't know
the secret handshake.
Yeah. There you go. So he knew that something was up, and that's why he was kind of hesitant at that point. But he said, you know, when you shook hands with me the normal way on saying goodbye, I knew you were a phony. So did we ever see the secret handshake again? I don't think
no.
so. Here's what's interesting.
But this is very Scooby-Doo ending, not to go there again in one episode, but wow, take off the fake Dirk Morgan mask.
Yeah, didn't you notice?
Reveal old man Tanner.
So, you know, it's like, who is this guy? You know, we never did find out
we never find out what his name is. We just knew he was an evil criminal who wanted to make Superboy evil. That's the end of the story.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. but here's the good part. It turns out the robot goofed, aimed the ray on a juvenile delinquent who resembled him. As a result, he did not become evil, but good.
And a side effect, of course, is he doesn't remember that Superboy is Clark Kent.
What luck. It must have been the shock. It must have been the shock of the changeover.
Must have been the shock of the cyborg or Cyclops robot.
He says, I don't know, you know, something has happened to me. I don't know what, but I feel different, as if something bad has been erased in me. And so he decides he's going to go back to reform school to serve out his sentence and be a model inmate. So perhaps someone will adopt him and give him a swell home just like Clark's.
Oh, screw that.
Yeah.
Don't go back to reform school, kid. That's for losers.
And Ma seems all confused by it. Poor Ma.
So that shampoo she's using.
Exactly. So there we go. We've got Sunboy finally in the Legion, and we've already gone into who he is, and you know, that sets us up well for the next story in our next episode. And
because we have another Legion to introduce in the next episode.
I can't wait.
I know you can't. Oh. And I'm going to eat animal crackers in honor of that episode.
That's awesome. Okay, so that's it for this episode of the Legion of Substitute Podcasters. You can reach us at by email at legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com. And our website is legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, and you can find our episodes there, and you can also leave comments and leave some feedback. But if you really want to join in on the conversation, head on over at the comic forums. We have our own forum, and that is forum.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, and join in the conversation there.
Please talk to us. We talk back. Believe it or not.
It's true. It's true. Because, again, we just love the feedback. It's so awesome. There's my Little 80s reference. Well, at least I could say that if it wasn't for the fact that I use that word like all the time.
Holy comic queen, Batman.
Dude, you got like a parsec wide mouth.
Yes, I do, actually.
Yeah, that was too easy too, wasn't it?
Yeah. Sorry.
Anyway, heading back to the 21st century, I am Paul French, otherwise known as Wee Lad. Tomorrow to be known as Arm Fall Off Boy.
Oh, and I am Darren Noel, Condo Shopping Kid.
Oh, I like that even better.
Yeah. I forgot actually what my original name was. I need to write that down when we start recording.
Condo Shopping Kid? That's awesome. All right, we're headed back in the time bubble.
Woohoo!